confusing them for dirt.
What do you mean?
Initially. Looking at dirt.
Like what? Like in class, or you were just looking at dirt?
No, I was just looking at dirt.
That's kind of weird.
Got one of these. Oh, these are okay.
Those are just your regular. Oh no, those are the old ones.
No, these are new ones. I got these at the same time as these.
Oh, okay. Those are a little more square.
It was buy two or whatever.
Yeah. For those listening at home, Steve's doing a quick. Those are very square. Those are not good.
Yeah, comparatively, it's actually kind of wild.
Yeah. Well, you look like
how small these were.
You look like an early 2000 hacker with those ones. Those are the most fitting for your face.
These are round, and then these ones are kind of the in between maybe.
Yeah. Those are the ones you pop the lenses out of in middle school and you wear because you're like, you pop the lenses out of those ones and you wear them on hipster day for middle school spirit.
Oh yeah, but also what about these?
Are those
folding? You're like, wait a second.
Yeah.
These aren't glasses.
They're folding knockoff Ray-Bans. Yikes. I tell you, the structural integrity of those is really bad.
It's a wild ride. These are my favorite, though. These are my everyday.
This is really good radio. Jesus fucking Christ. I'm not even doing the screen cap. I'm just doing the audio recording again. You missed this last goof.
You gotta admit it. That was a good one. That can be an inside joke. I didn't even know you were recording. But
I knew you were going to come back to the table with something. I knew it was going to be something dumb, and I wanted to make sure I was here for it.
Look, I'm a pop comic, okay?
All right. It's Sunday afternoon. Welcome to David Foster Wallace and Gromit, the officially unlicensed Infinite Jest fan cast. I'm your host, Jared. With me, as always, coming in live and direct via satellite is...
Hi, it's me, Dofer Dumber, and I'm here live.
Co-host Steve. This week's episode is not brought to you by Trader Joe's, as many would like to be led to believe.
Instead, oh, it's not?
Nope, this week, darn. This week's episode, yeah, they did not respond to my email about sponsorship. This week's episode is brought to you by, it's brought to you by the new wave that I'm on. Steve, I don't know if you know about this yet. I've been extremely off the Reka brand Icelandic small batch vodka. And the San Pellegrino Limonada canned juice, sparkling juice. I've been extremely off this one. 50-50
with those. I'll get something to sponsor us really quick. Give me a second.
For those listening at home, that's not so much a formal sponsor as much as it is fuel for a week's worth of reading both our select novella for the week as well as Infinite Jest and just that good creative fuel, that good working fuel you need. I'm talking about lemonade and vodka. Steve, what sponsor do you have for us this week?
Never mind, sorry.
Okay.
This episode is brought to us by, well, the problem is it's location-based. I can't, surrender my location.
I can hear it. I'll take this part out. What is it? We'll censor that part and then say what it is.
It's just a plastic bottle of beer.
Does that have a plastic top?
Yeah.
It's it's a bottle of beer with a plastic top? What is that?
Yeah, it's discounter store beer.
Wow. This is
the really cheap stuff. It's like cheaper than water.
Oh my god. Yeah. Wow, that's
rare.
Is
the stuff that I get because it's cheap, and then Sven usually gets, like, good, really, the latest one was really good.
Expensive beer.
Wheat beer.
Okay.
Local brewery, really, it's got to be the best beer I've had. And probably will forever be.
Really?
Just because it's... Yeah. Just because it was, as far as I'm concerned, ideal.
What's funny for those listening at home that don't know this is that, like, two, maybe 3 years ago, Steve and I had another podcasting venture that is still without a title where we reviewed beers. It had one episode where we reviewed bottled Guinness that we bought at Safeway. And now, all these years later, all this time later, here we are again with the podcast within a podcast, Brew Talk, or Suds Talk, if you will.
Suds Talk, yeah.
Suds Talk.
We're basically describing everywhere in the world.
Because we're global citizens.
England, Scotland, Ireland, Belgium, France, Spain, Portugal, Germany, Luxembourg, Italy, everywhere you're going to have, that's Western Europe, but Bulgaria, my goodness, Bulgaria.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I want to backpedal a little bit.
We're live. That's right.
Sorry. I just want to backpedal a little bit so we can sort of take account of our now somewhat more expansive umbrella of IPs. within the David Foster Wallace and Gromit LLC business model, we now have Bean Talk, or Jack and the Bean Talk, for those who are a little more in the know of the goof. We have Treat Time, or Treat Talk. That's a name that's still out for review. And now I want to just quickly make sure that we've added, formally, I want to call it Specialty Suds. I think Sud Talk, there's no alliteration, but Specialty Suds, a weekly program specialty in which we discuss a specialty sud. Not a bad idea.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Bean Talk.
Jack and the Bean Talk. Jack and the Bean Talk.
Treat Time, Bean Talk. Specialty Suds is nice. I was going to go Brew Boys.
Oh, Brew Boys is good.
To have thought of Specialty Suds in and of itself kind of gives it, that gives it, that as a moniker kind of gets precedent, I think.
Sort of usurps the Brew Boys. And also, we can just lump in, like I did with the Reka just now, we can lump in whatever our alcoholic beverage or our adult beverage of choice for the week is within the Specialty Suds. And we can do sort of like a specialty slash suds idea. So it's not just, oh, this is a specialty brew, it's going to be a specialty sud across the board. Right. This past week with Ashley deposed, I just stayed up for like 72 hours at one point. I was barely eating because at this point I had no one to tell me, hey, not even tell me to go to bed or when to eat, but rather like, hey, I'm coming home from work. We have a finite window that is designated as dinner time. And then, oh, I'm going to bed, which I have about a half hour in either direction where it's like, and this is what I designate as well as dinner or as bedtime. Whereas instead it's like, it's 5 a.m. and I'm making dinner. Yeah. And I don't know what's happening in my life.
Kind of same here with the whole, like, mostly absent roommate thing, like, around every once in a while. And I generally don't even know when.
Yeah.
Or sometimes I have a time frame, but it's like lately, it's just been like, I'm up roaming around at 3 in the morning, just like finding myself walking from room to room for no specific designated reason.
Let me ask you a question
You can't sleep and you have stuff to think about, so you decide, oh, I'm going to walk while I'm at it.
Let me ask you a question that I already know the answer to. How often are you talking to yourself? Or rather, how often are you having full conversations with yourself? Because for me, past week, constantly. I was narrating every action that I did.
That's a thing too, I think, with like, because specifically in my case, I'm working on some like dialogues that aren't necessarily like, specifically internalized dialogues, but to be written down.
Oh,
right. Yeah. Whether it be for short story or books or whatever. And so I'm almost constantly in a state of dialogue, whether it's, like I said, whether it's internal or meant to be written down somewhere. But there's, since I'm hanging out in an empty flat, and you know, hanging out on the balcony or walking around too, if I go out and walk around, it's constant.
No, but I know what you mean. It's definitely, for a lot of what I would do is, like, I found myself stressed with either nominee or with anything that I might have been working on in the moment. Not so much stressed, but kind of, like, I would have an internalized dialogue that's going on where I'm kind of like, all right, I need to do this, I need to do that, here's my plan for the day. And then 10 minutes into that action, I realize that I'm speaking it all out loud and responding to it as well. So now I'm talking to myself in a very literal sense of, like, responding and having a back-and-forth dialogue with myself. In a very unfortunate way, and the only points at which I'd realize I'm doing it are where I'm getting in and out of a car. I would be realizing I'm doing it as I'm like pressing the elevator button for the gym, and then a stranger comes out, and I'm mid-sentence with myself, or I'm, you know, it's not a great feeling, it's not a great act. I want to talk a little bit about, real briefly, you had texted me about that Reddit atheism goof that I did.
I mean, mention it for the podcast. What was the full caption?
So
I thought it was pretty funny.
Was don't come for me on ritual just because your Reddit atheism is in vogue.
Yeah, that's right. I thought that was good. That was funny.
Yeah, no, it's a good goof. It's less a goof and more an experience. So what happened was, around Rosh Hashanah, I had a couple relatively unpleasant experiences as an unorthodox Jew in Seattle. A couple relatively unpleasant experiences having to do with that. That were just sort of people that I know, friends of mine, realizing that I'm Jewish and either making some sort of anti-Semitic remark or some kind of disparaging remark. I get that it's cool for you to like hate religion and to be edgy therein, but like don't come for me on my like little semblance of religiosity. If I'm going to wear my yarmulke, if I'm going to say like, hey, you know, let's have a little apples, have a little honey for Rosh Hashanah. It's like, no, fuck you. Fuck you if you're going to try and get angry at me for that. So How that actualized or how that materialized not too long ago was last week, I think, or a little before the podcast. And I might have told you about this, but maybe not. I was out with a group of people, and an auxiliary friend of mine invited a friend of theirs, you know, sort of this tertiary removal. I didn't know this person. I didn't really know the person who invited him, even still. And they start telling me this story about how, oh yeah, the other week, yeah, he's telling me this story about, he's like, oh yeah, and one time I was up drinking all night long with a group of people. I had to go, and like, I realized as I was coming out of the stupor, like I had to take a shit. And already I'm like, gross story, but that's everyone ever. And he's going, oh, so we were in the car and we pull over at this church parking lot, and I'm just in the parking lot having this horrendous shit. All right, man. And he says, as he's wrapping up, they're there for a while, as he's wrapping up, some of the early churchgoers, people who are setting up for an 8 a.m. service, people who are, you know, getting ready for the day, are showing up. And he's still there in their parking lot in full eye or full view of everyone having this disgusting poop. And he said, yeah, so I'm having this huge poop in their parking lot. And then I leaned out the window as I was done to all these people who were staring at me. And I said, fuck Jesus. And he starts laughing. And I'm sitting there. And like I said, I'm not clinging to any real sense of religiosity. I like the religious aspects that I do practice because of my ties to ritual and symbolism. But I have a real fucking problem with that because it has nothing to do with religion. It's just like a shitty thing to do. It's just like a really gross, disgusting, disrespectful thing to do to anyone. And what I don't like is that he's saying that, or he was saying it, because there's this idea of like, oh, fuck Christianity, right? And like, yeah, in contemporary society, it's not just Christianity. Like, all religion is, for the most part, bad, or like there's some negative tenets of everything. But like, does the story still carry that weight if he said, oh, I was in the parking lot of a synagogue and I did it, or I was in the parking lot of a mosque and I did it? Does it have the same weight? And then also, like, why the fuck would you do that in the first place? Like, what is, not even why, but what is funny to someone, to a group of people? Because he's saying this to the group. And people were laughing, and people were like, oh, you really got him this time. What is funny to that group of someone pulling their pants down, taking a shit in a church parking lot, and then screaming out the window, fuck Jesus? It's like, man, you are 30 years old. You are too fucking old to be doing this edgy 13-year-old boy thing.
Yeah. Yes, I know exactly what you mean. I probably would have a lot of things to say about this. We've opened up a can of worms. I somewhat agree with what you said about religion or religion in like a popularized sense. Yeah, sure, fine. I think pick and choose your aspects of religion to bring up a problem with, and then have a conversation there. No matter how much one wants to say screw Jesus,
yeah,
or whatever,
yeah, well,
God.
Well, hold on, just a sidebar. I think what's important to the story to acknowledge is that this is it's a secular action. Not just his view on it in either clinging to, like I had said before, this idea of like Reddit atheism, because I think in Seattle that's very popular. Seattle's right. Very, such a liberal city that this idea of like, oh, religion's fucking dumb, religion's the opiate of the masses, open your third eye, which, one, that's a very misrepresented quote, but we don't need to get into that. Anyone who's listening to a literary podcast.
I was just about to say that.
Anyone listening to a literary podcast should know that, and if not, I'm sorry, I'm not going to explain it. But it's...
Yeah.
There's this idea of like, oh, I'm so woke, religion's so dumb. But this is such a secular act where it has nothing to do with the fact that this is a church or these are Christians. If I pulled it, I mean, it's the same effect as like, I drive to Safeway and I'm taking a shit in their parking lot, and then I see someone watching me and I point to them and I go, fuck you, like in the most aggressive manner possible. Or if I go to a church, or no, sorry, not to a church, to a school, I pull my pants down to elementary school and take a shit and go, fuck school, am I right? And it's like, no, dude, because you're still a 30-year-old man who just took a shit in public and are trying to act like you're the cool one, you're the one who has something to prove.
Yeah.
Like, what? It's just a matter, it's a matter of respect. That's, I just
it's a matter of respect.
Yeah.
It's also a matter of, I think, I don't want to get too self-righteous or whatever, even though I think his stance was self-righteous in the first place. So maybe criticizing it
it's
in
very,
a self-righteous
it's very
way
like
is defensible.
Self-serious
I
and self-important.
I just don't want to say anything that isn't too, isn't, you know, I don't want to get pragmatic.
Let's just
whatever,
say that I think that in addressing this, we, in even acknowledging that there is an issue with what happened, we've established the high ground, and any self-righteousness is with merit.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
I think that when I say self-awareness, I mean it's childish, yes. It's also a little silly, like anti-Christianity, anti-Judeo-Christianity, because we won't get into it, but I think there's a lot is settled by just referring to it as Judeo-Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
Because that covers both bases, because there is a very tight-knit relationship between the two. I think when I say self-awareness, I mean there is a popularized thing right now where it's like religion, Judeo-Christianity, is a like rule book, and it's like, oh, but it's such an outdated rule book. And what I think people like probably this guy need to understand, so when I be a little more aware of this,
yeah,
that they're dependent on a number of these principles, especially in terms of the law, the idea of some universal laws. We can argue till we're blue in the face about was it a principle before it was written, or since it's written, it's now a principle that we have to follow.
So you're saying,
so they're following that train of thought.
Well, hold on. So what you're establishing first off is there is a tie, there is an implicit or at this point socially inherent tie between moral values intrinsically, or like universally moral values, do not kill, like golden rule kind of stuff, and religion. Is that what you're establishing?
It's written down, so it must be done, rather than it must be done, or it is this way, that's why it was written down. Or the common mindset behind, like, anti-religion or anti-establishment or whatever is the same thing, and I'm glad you brought up the school thing or whatever.
Yeah.
Because equating these things is very key, where it's like, you know, oh, screw this, screw Jesus or whatever you want to say with respect to church or a specific religion set. Because why? As a form of rebellion of, you know, the law that was written down.
Right.
But also recognize it could be the other way around.
No, right. No, I agree. Because that's the in their mind, or in the mind of, like I said, the Reddit atheist idea. And I have no problem with atheists.
Right.
I have the Reddit atheist, for people who aren't really so much in the know.
You kind of established you did have a problem with at least a specific faction of atheism.
No, I have no problem with the idea of atheism. I have a problem with the Reddit atheist, which is in the same sort of vein as, like, the Ricky Gervais ideology, where it's like, I'm going to get in your... It's just like, you can't have a respectful discourse because I'm going to get in your face first and foremost and tell you you're wrong. And then the Reddit atheist is like, you know that they're an atheist by merit of they've told you 1,000 fucking times that they're an atheist and want to make sure that they've hammered in their points in a very, not so much offensive, but in a very, like, inflammatory way, where it's like, oh, you want to challenge me, don't you? It's like, man, I don't want anything to do with you. Like, I didn't ask for this debate. I have no problem with atheism. If you can believe what you want to believe, I have a problem with you trying to shove it down my fucking throat. It's the same reason that I don't evangelize for any religiosity I hold. My problem with this is that, yeah, it's the Reddit atheist idea of, like, fuck religion, am I right, my guy? And for everyone listening at home, I did a quick what is this called? Like a hang loose, you know, rock and roll kind of hand symbol, like a vape life, vape tough, big 420 kind of. Anyway, there's this separation between, like, oh, I took a shit in a church parking lot. Hell yeah, my guy, fuck religion, right? And you shouldn't have done that because it just makes you an asshole. It doesn't matter that it's religion or not. This is not a religious tenet that you're subverting. It's a social norm of not taking a shit in public, one, not screaming an obscenity at a stranger, two, and disrespecting a public institution that was minding their own business. They didn't come for you. Because if this was, you know, I get there's some defensibility when you look at, like, there was the whole Westboro Baptist movement where people are out in the public and they have signs that say, like, God hates fags and, like, you're going to burn in hell and all these things. It's like, that's inflammatory. And the people who would meet that with either violence or some sort of yelling back, it's not good. I wouldn't do that because I'm not going to be confrontational in that regard. But it has a defensible aspect I guess you can. These are people minding their own business without a relatively inflammatory ideology. It's 8 a.m. on a Sunday. Like, every component of the story, when you start stacking it, is so fucking bizarre. Right. And I don't support that whatsoever. And people have told about that since then, trying to get a hot take. Their only response is like, that's really disrespectful. Why would you do that?
Here's the takeaway.
Yeah.
Here's what he failed to do. Here's what everybody should try to do.
Right. I guess we haven't given a takeaway.
I think you must try and succeed, hopefully. And you should succeed. If you can't establish in some way, shape, or form a fair discourse, this goes for everything.
A civil discourse.
If you cannot establish fair, civil, there are many words, but
yeah.
If you cannot in some way establish a fair, civil discourse or fail to do so, or don't, then you goofed.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, at that point, the conversation is null and void.
It's as simple as that. It's condemnable, and any conversation from then on out, yeah, you're right, exactly, is null and void.
Well, because that action...
So what was the purpose?
Because that action
This goes for anything.
Yeah. No,
religion,
that...
politics, etc. If two people, or one person, or 100 people, cannot set up a fair discourse...
No, that action is the representative equal and opposite reaction to the idea of, like, the Westboro Church. And that is something condemned by people of all religions and walks of life because they understand how inflammatory and abusive that is, an idea. So to go and say, oh, I don't support that thing that happened years ago, I'm going to go to... And this is, like, you know, North Seattle, a very benign, neighborhood, family-friendly,
on. It's 8 a.m, these are probably older... It's an older population, I bet, getting out of their old 80s, 70s cars.
It's just like people in their Sunday best sauntering through the door, and now here's this 30-year-old man going, fuck Jesus. And it's like, dude, why? Like, you deserve for someone to come after you on that. These are people that are just trying to... It's 8 a.m., man. Most people haven't even eaten breakfast. It's too early for that shit.
8 a.m. They want to go to dang church.
They're probably walking through the door. They're going to have a little complimentary cup of coffee and a little cookie or something and start their day. And, like, they're going to go home and watch the game after and, like, mow their lawn. It's just, it's like abject suburbia.
You don't need this. You walk in without having said that. You walk in and just go in there. The older people or the middle-aged people are going to smile and probably try to say hi to you because there's a little greeting period. And it's like...
Offer you a snack.
Think about that.
These are not people that were against you. No one here was trying to attack you. And also, keep in mind, in Seattle, most churches are relatively, I would say, or exceptionally progressive. These are churches that, like, are really all walks of life. Like, hey, we just want to give you a chance to be a part of the more community staples, be a part of the community, be a part of what we want to share. So this isn't Deep South act of rebellion, act of subversion. And I can't stress that enough. This is in no way a subversive act. It's just a dick move. It's just something an asshole does. So in short, in conclusion, you're right about the civil discourse. If once that has broken down, everything is broken down. And beyond that, I think there was like a Key and Peele sketch where they talked about it before a couple years ago, where this idea of like... LGBT like community, how they obviously there's a lot of issues with like religion because of different tenets that condemn their life in Seattle. I think that you're pretty hard up to find a church that isn't going to be accepting of the population of the city. But it's this idea where it's like no one's out to get you. You doing this, you're just an asshole. Like, you didn't prove a point, you made yourself look bad. We've actually just harped on this for 32 fucking minutes. So maybe you want to move on to that.
You lost me with that last part. I'm not sure how that was related.
Wait, what do you mean? What do you mean? No. I was just saying that, like, for this person to do it, in their mind, it was the church should be condemned.
An act of rebellion.
An act of subversion. Because they thought that they were being persecuted, or they thought that they were being targeted by a religious organization. When in reality, and that's why I said there's... Okay, for those listening at home, because maybe I didn't make that jump smoothly. There's a Key and Peele sketch about an office worker, these two guys in a cubicle, and there's a dialogue happening where one of them is like very, very openly, like flamboyantly gay, and he has like a popsicle that's a penis shape, and he's like, oh, what, you have a problem with this? You have a problem with me being gay? And then the punchline at the end, and this is Keegan-Michael Key, and then the punchline at the end is that Jordan Peele is met by his boyfriend, and they walk away, and Keegan-Michael Key is like, oh, he's not homophobic, I'm just an asshole. That's the punchline. So that's what I'm saying. It's like, they're, what you think might be you defending yourself, defending your rights, defending your way of life, subverting or rebelling against religion, is not that. It's just you being an asshole. That's the takeaway.
I see.
Takeaway?
I see.
Welcome to David Foster Wallace.
I like my takeaway better, but your takeaway is fine.
I mean, it's the same idea. Yours is more eloquent, where it's this idea of, you know, you want to make sure that you remain civil and you can have that open discourse and you can share ideas and you can...
Yeah, I'm just spoofing.
Yeah, you can share ideas. But welcome to David Foster Wallace and Gromit. We're the most antagonistic and inflammatory podcast on Apple Podcasts through the iTunes Store. Like and subscribe. But also, don't be a dick. That's our big takeaway. I know that you want to
do grandma's podcast. This opening conversation is wildly different than how last week was. But at the same time, people need to understand a lot of the antagonism of like, dude, Harry Potter is the most poorly written book in history, and stuff like that. Or like, if you like superheroes, turn this off right now. If someone doesn't understand that there's a bit of comedy in that, turn this off right now. Yeah. No, I'm kidding.
No, because I mean, I like superhero movies just fine, which actually brings me really smoothly to this point. I wanted to just talk about how like I saw that they're going to be rebooting Watchmen for a show on HBO with the showrunner from Lost and The Leftovers, which was a really good program. Under the guise of Marvel and the superhero universes have been presented in such a way that comedy is the foremost factor, where it's like, oh, you can't have a superhero movie unless it's comedically oriented, or you can't, like, the Justice League idea and all those DC things were going by the wayside because they were criticized for being too self-serious, which is the weirdest criticism to me, because you would think that a superhero movie, especially a Batman movie or a Batman adjacent movie, would want to be self-serious. Christopher Nolan was never criticized, but like, The showrunner for this Watchmen pilot that was issued had said, like, this needs to be a show. I don't know the direct quote. I guess I could pull it up. But this needs to be a show that is counterintuitive to this newly developed idea of a superhero. Something that is like, you wear a mask because you want to hide your face because you're up to no good. You don't want to be this celebrated character, the social caricature, because with that comes an entirely different understanding of vigilantism, vigilante justice, and like the inherently negative nature of lording yourself over your contemporaries.
Sure. I think the idea behind the idea behind something like this is that, what was the first comic book? Like, the first big time, was it Stan Lee's Spider-Man?
No, it was probably Superman.
Was that the first?
No, I think Superman was first. Spider-Man is very old. Spider-Man is definitely an early one.
Who did Superman?
Man, I could not tell you. I think Superman, anyone listening, feel free to correct us. My knowledge is not as wide as I'd like to be on the subject. But I want to say Superman was like an offshoot, because comics started with this, like, the Weird Tales idea. Like, the serial stories with illustrations. Like, H.P. Lovecraft wrote a lot of these, like, Weird Tale serials, and with those eventually came, like, the detective stories, where it was animated, or not animated, but illustrated serials of crime novellas, and then you had like that to the idea of superhero. Huh?
That's Poe first,
right? And then end up. I want to say it was Superman, because you worked your way from like strange and like more macabre ideas that were only going to be published in a penny dreadful, or that idea of like a serial illustration, and then you went from like weirder to a little more realistic detective, and then from detective to like the vigilante hero to like it was like the Spirit and like Superman and Dick Tracy. Probably, I don't know if that's a superhero necessarily, that's more of like a advanced detective, cop, but you know, you get to that, you make that jump eventually somewhere in that middle distance.
Anyway,
yeah,
the point is with original comic books there was a degree of humor to it. So like, I know Spider-Man for sure, like at the beginning he was, you know, he was a goofy kid who would crack wise, and give someone the what for. At the same time, you know, in old New York,
but
you know, pizza, the pizza capital of the world.
With my pipe and hot you slice. Know, yeah, can I get yeah,
pipe
can
and
you,
hot slice?
Wait, real quick, can you
pizza? I'm fucking za. I got a cup of za, and I mean a cup of coffee and a slice of za. You know. Anyway,
Watchmen
came later. Well, Watchmen came later was specifically not that.
Well, to be fair,
I think Watchmen was the only comic book I actually read. I read a couple, like, when I was a kid, like, the original Spider-Man. I think it was just Spider-Man that I ever read, maybe a couple X-Men.
Well, I've read a lot of comics and a lot of comic, like, compendiums. My issue, twofold. One, yeah, I agree, there was... I imagine a lot of comedy in these early Spider-Man, early Superman, early hero stories, but it was more comedy that was indicative of the time. Like, if you watch the Adam West Batman, it's very indicative of, like, what humor was back then, or how little self-seriousness was involved in these stories, because there wasn't that concept. But as comics and as this idea of a hero and vigilante justice developed, it became extremely self-serious, extremely gritty, extremely violent. So in 2008, because here's the thing, you look at Sam Raimi's Spider-Man, and those are pretty serious until the third one, when it goes off the rails, a la Evil Dead 1, 2, Army of Darkness. Spider-Man 1, 2, Spider-Man 3, with Peter Parker, or fucking Tobey Maguire, really losing his mind. Which is, by the way, this is the only Spider-Man 3 apologist podcast. David Foster Wallace and Gromit is extremely Spider-Man, pro-Spider-Man 3.
He pulls one of these.
For those of you listening at home, he's really doing it.
I'm just goofing around with my hair, you know.
Hair goofing, but no, my second issue. So anyway, the point I'm making is that once these movies came back on the scene, there was too much comedy in contrast to what comics had become, which were very self serious and very absent of jokes, very like gritty worlds that were presented to mirror a grittier time post-millennium. What is with pieces of media not involving New York accents? Have you ever seen King of Queens with Kevin James? He doesn't even try to do a Queens accent. What is that?
Oh, Kevin James. Who's the other guy that's in that?
Lou Ferrigno from The Hulk.
No. I think there's another famous guy. Who am I thinking of?
Oh, Ben Stiller's dad? Jerry Stiller? Yeah. Is that
also,
right?
Isn't there another guy? Who's that other guy? Who's the other little guy?
Little guy.
That's his friend. Who's the guy that plays his friend?
Isn't Patton Oswalt
that? Patton Oswalt? Yeah, there you go.
Holy shit. He's way too good for that show.
Ben Stiller's dad is classic. Those other guys, maybe not so much. But it has the Scientology lady, too.
Well, she's out of Scientology now. You know, I saw a whole weird, like, Scientologist smear campaign against her.
She's still the Scientology lady.
Yeah, but she's not... She, like, spearheaded the going clear, and like she was working on some show. What was her name?
I know.
Leah Remini.
I worked at a bookstore. Leah Remini, yeah. I worked at a bookstore. Her book was, it's all over the place.
I know it's old hat to comment on, but like, there's no way in fucking hell that she would ever be married to Kevin James.
I have no comment on that, but I will say, didn't she have like a really strong Queens accent in that show though?
That's just
so
her
she
voice,
made
though.
Up for it.
No, she didn't. No, she didn't make that. That's just her voice. She just has that.
Yeah, I know, but
grating
that
voice
makes up for it. That's what I'm saying.
Man, I don't know.
Is that it's not? It's not the media is completely devoid of a classic New York. Okay, but no, we have to talk about Hard to Be a God. So Hard to Be a God, in summary, is a book by Arkady and Boris Stolgatsky, the Russian brothers, and it's a sci-fi / fantasy. I don't want to give away too much, but it's in a future Earth, but it doesn't take place on Earth because humans have the technology. They found terrestrial planets, and so basically the evolutionary process was the same, or the mutations are near identical, and so this terrestrial planet is very similar to Earth. It's almost a replica in terms of the progression. So they're in the Dark Ages, and this population cannot seem to get out of the Dark Ages. So this Earth, the Earth as we know it, our Earth, because it's referred to in Earth terms, these Russian space they're astronauts and space station workers, have made their way, you know, landing in remote places and then integrating themselves, clandestine integrations into these societies. And the process is very much like it takes a long time, right? So these people have been there for years. And so we follow these characters who are mentally so different from everything around them. So virtually what we follow is a specific character named Don Umata, who has an objective to find a missing... Well, he has many objectives. We follow his day-to-day life, but he is following... We're not following, looking for missing people, missing intellectuals or artists, or writers, readers, etc., in an ever-growing anti-people state. I think two key things to note, it's very interesting in terms of, he mentions a couple times, and you might remember this, but I think this is one of those books where, because it's in like a highly fascist medieval state.
Or and, like alternate reality, alternate Soviet, alternate timeline Soviet state. Because this, it doesn't exist in the same, this is part of the Noon universe of these brothers' books, but it doesn't exist in the same world as Stalker, but it's the same idea of like a mysteriously right. absent from the...
Roadside Picnic.
Huh?
Roadside Picnic.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, Roadside Picnic. It's like, it exists in what, I mean, this, I forgot what I read about it, but it's like, it's, it exists in like sort of a, it's fantasy and sci-fi with some ideas of like magic realism, of this idea of like, this is Soviet Russia, or it could be if under these circumstances XYZ happens. You know what I mean? Like it's a very real world, a very real understanding of the world. With references to the world, even still, like in the opening, they talk very specifically about World War II, and they do like a little William Tell goof.
Yeah, the William Tell thing. I do want to mention though, there is a specific distinction too between like the current world as we know it, and yeah, there are references to the Soviet Union, but he also mentions a few times like if only they knew, or if only everyone on Earth could see this, and then they would be more thankful.
Yeah,
for our position, or the position that Earth has had for however many years. So that it's an interesting thing too, where there's this degree of separation still, and I think that's key to know, because it's not like this book where it's like, oh, whoa, this dystopian world is so much like our world right now, and it's like, well, no, I think there are parallels because some of these principles are timeless.
Yeah,
but there is also a distinction between look at this and look at where you are.
Yeah,
and then the conversation at the end is very much then sort of the discourse of what do you even do?
Yeah,
what does someone who has the information from both angles do then? And that was what he wanted to know.
Yeah,
and with the doctor also is not knowing that. What do you do?
Yeah, no, I enjoyed it. It's I would say for those listening at home.
I would highly recommend it again.
Yeah, I'd highly recommend it. If you're listening at home and if you are trying to read along, or if you're going to be investigating some of these different selections, I would say that this is, it's a bit longer than what we've been reading, and it's a little, it's not inaccessible, but it is definitely, certainly hard sci-fi, and a far cry from the more metaphysical, albeit like a little more playful things that we've read previously. Pedro Páramo wasn't playful, but it was
narrative style was a little bit playful.
Yeah, well, I guess that's what I mean. It's like
I know what you mean. Yeah,
more it was like an experimental narrative, and like the third policeman was more playful, and that was like a comedy.
Certainly.
Yeah, and then
that was distinct.
And then Lechita Invisibili is a very like like I guess it's prose poetry. Yeah. So this is the most hard and fast novel that we've read. Yeah,
but yeah, it's different. It's very different from Roadside Picnic, if anyone has read that.
Yeah, well, and also this Roadside Picnic is a collection of, it's like a collection of accounts existing in parallel of the zone. You know what I mean? This is one. This is one cohesive narrative. Roadside Picnic is sort of like a collection of
this.
Accounts.
This one is a cohesive narrative. Yeah. Whereas, yeah, Roadside Picnic is a lot more ambiguous. Whereas this one, it's like it's pretty well explained early on what's going on.
Yeah.
And then they toy with the concept of these godlike characteristics, and then it's constantly played with this idea of where do you go from there?
Yeah.
Where do you go with your, you know, being in a position where you know the person standing next to you is so far below you in terms of advancement. Not, you know, in terms of these characters, it's made very clear.
Yeah.
Where do you go from there? And it's a very, it's a very interesting idea to play with.
What do you want to, give it a rating? So, what do you want to give it a rating on?
Yeah.
You want to...
Let's say in terms of poison. So if you're getting poisoned...
There we go.
I would say enough poison to kill you.
Okay. Enough. You heard it here first. This has been David Foster Wallace and Gromit. In closing, I want to say a couple things. In checking our RSS feed, the amount of subscribers is continually going up. I understand that's aggregate data, so it's hard to see what we're exactly at. I've seen a lot of these, I imagine, are coming from iTunes and from Apple Podcasts by merit of the name and looking for David Foster Wallace Media. And you've definitely found us. This is the only officially unlicensed Infinite Jest fan cast. We promise, we've run out of time this week, but we promise next week we'll be getting to Infinite Jest. In addition to our
novella... Is there another thing you wanted to talk about?
Oh, and we're going to get to that.
That last thing? Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, and also for next week we're going to be reading...
The Violent Barred Away by Flannery O'Connor.
All right, we're going to be doing American Literature.
If you are listening, if you are actually listening, if there is someone listening, I have no idea how to know that. If you're out there and you're listening, I implore you, if you haven't read Flannery O'Connor, now is the time to start. Read along with us, maybe. Violent Barred Away is her second novel. Maybe start with Wiseblood, which is the first. Or start with the short stories. Those are easier and quick. You can read it in one sitting. I implore, Flannery O'Connor is a must for everyone, as far as I'm concerned.
Yep.
A lot of these generally are recommendations on my end.
Yeah.
Like I said, like we've said with all of them so far, they're recommendations. But familiarize specifically, I think Flannery O'Connor is an American author. If that's something you're interested in, an American author that I think is essential.
All right, so that's the plan for next week. We understand this week was a little more haphazard. I feel like there were a couple little goofs that have been stewing throughout the week that we wanted to touch base on. In closing, one, make sure that you, if you are subscribed on iTunes, or if you are a fan of the podcast, if you're familiar with the podcast, do leave us a rating. That's going to be good to get us further up on the charts. This is entirely unsponsored, a free podcast. We're not looking for anyone's money. Unless you want to sponsor us in terms of like a business or like we said, Trader Joe's. We're not looking for anyone's individual money. There's no Patreon. We're not getting paid off this. Just give us a review. Get us higher up in those iTunes charts so we can spread the gospel of our goofs, our spoofs, our literary understanding, and of course, David Foster Wallace's seminal classic, Infinite Jest. Let us know what you like. Let us know what you don't like. Give us a question. Shoot us an email.
I want to answer advice questions.
Shoot us an email at davidfosterwallaceandgromit@gmail.com. And lastly, like I said, this is an entirely free podcast.
I don't know what degree to get when I'm going to college. What degree should I get? Ask us below, Goofus. We'll tell ya.
Okay.
Go ahead.
If you fucking, God damn it, Steve. If you want this to remain a free podcast, free of any sort of Patreon or anything like that, recently in the news, obviously net neutrality has been a bit of a hot button issue. If you want our podcast, just like any of the podcasts available for free through iTunes, to remain free and not be part of a social media or a streaming package that you're going to have to pay for through either Xfinity, Time Warner, Cox, whatever, be sure to go to www.battleforthenet.com and write to your congressman. Next week, we're going to be discussing this quote. We're going to let you guys sit on this, let you stew over this, really mill this over in your mind. This is coming in hot from a good Facebook share. We have no opinion of it as of yet. We'll discuss it next week. Open quote, can we romanticize video games the way we do books? Like you hear all these things about how you can curl up with a book on a rainy day and drink tea and smother yourself in blankets, but anytime you hear things about video games, it's always about how you're wasting your life away yelling into a headset as you play Call of Duty in a basement? Imagine bundling yourself up on the couch, the sound of rain hitting the roof, and putting Fable on for a few hours, or getting home after a long day of work. You make yourself a cup of cocoa, put on fuzzy pajamas, and play Viva Pinata for hours, not giving a second thought to the outside world. Semester just got out? Throw in some Fallout, and just take the night to breathe and enjoy. You aren't wasting your life away. You're enjoying it. Games can be just as much an escape as books, except you get... except you get to be part of the story. Hashtag blessed. Hashtag games. This has been David Foster Wallace and Gromit. We'll see you guys next week.